a friend to whom I sent birthday greetings for his 40th birthday on Wednesday emailed me back saying, 40 years is a long time, and I don't seem to have much on the clock to show for it. I know him well, and I know that despite one great setback, he has achieved a very great deal in his life. But obviously he regards himself as an underachiever. In the Lancet some time ago, a good while ago, there was an article which said that doctors had discovered among us a new and fatal health hazard, public health hazard. And it was reaching the proportions of an epidemic. And it was low self-esteem. The number of people suffering from low self-esteem seems to be rising and rising by the year. And obviously, we each of us know that there are times when we think very badly of ourselves. We know that we're surrounded, like the President of France was, by accusing voices from our own past, from our own imagination, and that it is very hard to keep one's head when one is surrounded by thoughts of low self-esteem. And a doctor said to me some time ago, about 9 out of 10 of the people I see in my surgery every week suffer from over-anxiety. And he said, that is not a medical illness. It's a spiritual illness. What is the church doing about it? And we have to admit that in the past, the church has contributed to people's low self-esteem. Many of us here remember sermons Sunday after Sunday threatening us with hell and brimstone. And I suppose a lot of it washed over us. But it certainly did contribute to people feeling wretched sinners and being taught to believe that. And how out of sync with Jesus, his actions and his teaching, that kind of mentality is. John the Baptist came preaching fire and brimstone, seeing people as sinners that needed to be converted. But Jesus, if we take his statement or the observation in Matthew 9, chapter 9, verse 46, when he saw the crowd, he was filled with compassion for them because they were so harassed and dejected, like sheep without a shepherd. And he came to heal, to build up, to give people back their confidence. And I have noticed in my life as a priest that the first sign of God's presence in somebody who discovers faith for the first time, or perhaps comes back to it after a period of deadness, the first sign, as far as I can see, is always a growth in self-confidence. Obviously, a trust in God, but even more noticeable is the great growth in self-confidence. As if God's immediate instinct with all of us was to build us up, not to knock us down, not to accuse us, but to heal us. And it is a good thing to remember that every time we come into contact with God in prayer or here in the Eucharist, his great desire is to build us up, to restore our self-confidence. Because he knows that low self-esteem makes for paralysis. And we don't do half the good we could do if we were able to believe fully in ourselves. We are often told that we are responsible only for the present moment. The past does not matter. The future is in God's hands. We are only responsible for the present moment. In one email I had this week, somebody who was free to do it went off to the Yorkshire Dales for Christmas and decided she would spend the time in reflection and prayer and have a kind of spiritual Christmas. And she wrote me what's quite, I think, an interesting paragraph. She said, "I sat still as never before for hours, waiting for God to speak or to whisper, or however he wanted to communicate with me. I rested and rested, read your book, and stopped to sit before God after every chapter. And here is the bit that is interesting. After a few days of silence, I became frustrated and begged God to speak to me that day. I left the cottage for a walk, and within a few yards of walking, I heard a whoosh, then a thud, and at my feet lay a little bird lying on its back with its stick-like legs in the air. It lay still, and I thought it was dead. I had no idea what kind of bird it was because I couldn't see the feathers. This had never happened to me in my life before, and my first thought was, if I try to pick it up and it is alive, it may struggle and I could damage it. So I placed a finger under its back and gently turned it upright. In a flash, it was up in its legs and flew away." And it reminded me of the passage in Matthew chapter 10 where Jesus says, "Sparrows are to a penny, and yet not one of them falls to the ground without my Father knowing it." And in replying to her email, I said, maybe he was also telling you that he doesn't usually speak to people, but what he does is send people to you that need picking up or putting a finger gently onto their backs and turning them upright to stand on their feet again. That's the way God acts in our lives. On Friday, on the website that is devoted to the works of Henry Nouwen, there was this very interesting observation and reflection. And I think it sums up what I'm trying to say. Often we want to be somewhere other than where we are, or even to be someone other than who we are. We tend to compare ourselves constantly with others and wonder why we are not as rich, as intelligent, as simple, as generous, or as good as they are. Such comparisons make us feel guilty, ashamed, or jealous. And here is his message. It is very important to realize that our vocation is hidden in where we are and who we are. We are each of us unique human beings, each with a call to realize in life what nobody else can, and to realize it in the concrete context of the here and now. We are unique human beings, each with a call to realize in life what nobody else can, and to realize it in the concrete context of the here and now. We will never find our vocation by trying to figure out whether we are better or worse than others. We are good enough to do what we are called to do. Be yourself.